This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And a reminder that Wednesday, 2 p.m., the governor of Louisiana, John Bel Edwards, will be here to talk about what's going on in our world as the coronavirus pandemic continues. More than 90,000 Americans dead, probably will reach 100,000 by Memorial Day. 26,249 cases of reported recovery in Louisiana, and that's good news. Out of 34,709, the deaths are 2,440. Louisiana ranks ninth in the country now in the number of deaths from coronavirus, and in the early days, as in a couple months ago, we were number two in the country. So we have come down. There are signs that things are getting better, but we're in phase one, and we'll see how it goes, and I'm sure the governor will have much to say about this as we visit with him tomorrow right here at 2 p.m. And one of the people involved is our first guest, Bo Milton, a local Baton Rouge resident. He's a community organizer, a participant of the Obama Foundation's MBK Rising. And good morning to you, Bo.
Hello. How you doing?
I'm doing well. And as we speak, where are you today?
I'm in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
You're in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the home of Talk Louisiana. And you are also involved with a national endeavor, as I mentioned, called MBK Rising. Could you tell us a bit about what you're doing in this realm?
Yeah, so MBK Rising, well, first of all, MBK is My Brother's Keepers Alliance. It was an initiative started by President Obama while he was in the White House, basically saying that we all have a stake in making sure that young men and boys of color thrive in America. So through this, the program has been doing tirelessly, like, a lot of work behind, you know, making sure that boys and young men of color thrive around the country and have opportunities and are mentored and are being inspired. And I've had a chance to be a part of this network. There was a five-year celebration of the program. It was the first national convening where President Obama came out and did a town hall with Steph Curry, and it was this big event to bring leaders together to inspire each other, let each other know what work is being done and what works so we can continue the efforts moving forward to make, you know, this world a better place.
We're hearing from Bo Milton, a Baton Rougean who's involved with MBK Rising, My Brother's Keeper. It's bringing together hundreds of young men of color and leaders working to break down barriers that too often leave boys and young men of color at a disadvantage. As you mentioned, it not only involves our former president, but also Steph Curry, who's a cultural icon and an athletic great. How did those two come together?
I mean, it's President Obama. He kind of knows everybody, I guess. So I think it was pretty cool, and there was a lot of other great people there too, such as Michael B. Jordan, Ryan Coogler, John Legend, just a lot of great icons there, you know, that President Obama brought in to inspire young leaders like myself.
Now, I believe this organization started about 6 years ago, so it's been around a while, but now it, of course, is gaining traction because of the time we're in. And these are interesting and perilous times, particularly for people who are not well off. And as we know, the minority community is often in that number. You're in Baton Rouge, a city that's a perfect example of this. How's it looking?
You know, there's progress to be made. There's a lot of progress to be made, and it's a lot of great people working on it. And as we continue to work, I just love the support that our wonderful mayor has for making sure that this happens. Mayor Broom has brought in Cities United, which actually focuses on violence reduction amongst African-American men. And so they're a specialist, so her bringing them in to try to help with everything has really helped a lot in the city as far as reduction of violence and, like, just kind of interrupting systems that are meant to break down, you know, that population.
Bo Milton, for those who'd like to know more about the MBK Network, how would they find out more?
They can go on Obama.org, And if they go on Obama.org, then they'll have information there about the My Brother's Keeper initiative.
And you are also involved with something called Drive-In Wi-Fi. Tell us about this.
Oh, okay. So the Drive-In Wi-Fi initiative is an initiative that I've started with BRIC. So I was on a call with MBK, the My Brother's Keeper Alliance, and Honorable John B. King spoke about a Wi-Fi initiative where people were parking buses in neighborhoods. So people that did not have connection with Wi-Fi would have internet connection. So I was like, wow, this is great. How can I bring this to my city? So I started strategizing and started calling people, and so we can get that same type of access here for people that might not have internet connection while libraries are closed and public means of being digitally connected. So I partnered with BRIC, and now there's Wi-Fi at select BRIC locations that people can just park their cars and safely use Wi-Fi.
Well, congratulations on your success, Boo, and it's certainly a worthy endeavor. And how did you get involved?
With the drive-through Wi-Fi initiative?
Well, and MBK Rising.
Oh, and MBK Rising. So I've done a lot of work with Cities United. I was a fellow for the program, and now I sit on the advisory board for Cities United, and we partner very close with the Obama Foundation with a lot of initiatives that we do. And because of that, I was able to be a part of the MBK Rising program and a lot of other things that the Obama Foundation has happened. And we've had a great relationship. They're very supportive and have taken me to a new level as a leader and have inspired me so I can inspire other people. So it's been a blessing.
Well, thank you for joining us, Boo, and good luck and keep going. Appreciate it. Stay safe.
Thank you.
We're joined now by Adam Knapp, president of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber since 2008. That's 12 years. And, of course, in his position, he and his organization are responsible for economic development in the nine-parish capital region. And right now, as we know, these are trying times for the economy. And businesses in Baton Rouge have been affected like businesses throughout the country and across the globe. Adam Knapp, good morning to you.
Hey, Jim. Thank you for having me on.
We last talked to you 2 weeks ago. What's changed in the last 2 weeks that perhaps makes things better?
Well, obviously, the phase one reopening on Friday is a landmark moment. We were all waiting to see how that would help us get back to work. And I think we're already seeing the benefits of that across the community. Those businesses that had been previously shuttered reopening, I think a little slowly, we're hearing from many of them that they're being a little bit more cautious about getting reopened. And so they're, other than the restaurants who have the guidance of specific ways to have their table set, for example, offices are coming back in a very cautious way. In many cases, still following the CDC guidance to recommend continued remote work for those that are high-risk individuals or those who are just simply not ready to come back because of childcare and other challenges. So while reopening is happening, I think it's still coming at a slow and cautious pace. We've also been hearing from a lot of employers that they're working through this almost like a kind of a pilot to understand what the guidance means for reopening from a safety perspective. How do you, for those that hadn't been essential businesses, how do you handle screening at the front door and temperature checks? We're getting a lot of questions from folks about some of those procedures. So I think it's what you'd expect. It's a slow reopening. It's going to be a slow reawakening of the economy, too.
There are several stories, and the reporting has been quite good during this time. But as you can imagine,
sure has.
The advocate has more on its plate than it can cover. And first of all, the horrific toll in nursing homes, just a huge number of deaths in nursing homes in our state. And I think about 40% of the cases of those who died in Louisiana have come from nursing homes. In the first reported workplace cluster, 100 coronavirus cases reported at 3 Acadiana crawfish farms. These places where people are congregating, or do you have concern that with phase one and then ultimately phase two and so on, that by the nature of the beast, with people being in closer contact with each other, that we're going to have more cases?
Yeah, and I think it's a great question and a great point, Jim. We do expect that that's going to – reopening is going to have some increased case activity. We expect that's going to be something we all need to be watching out for in the next week or two of case tests positive of cases to see what that means, especially what happens at the hospitals, the hospitalization and ventilator rate, to see if there's any – a dramatic uptick over the next 2 weeks. The governor has made clear that it's possible that he will do something like you've seen in Texas now, that they are moving to phase two, but they have left a few of their counties in a more slow reopening phase.
All right, hold tight. We're going to spend some more time, a few more minutes with Adam Knapp, then also hear from Mike Berto of Blue Cross Blue Shield. But first, we pause on Talk Louisiana for 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Adam Knapp, 12 years head of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber, and this time is like no other. It's the pandemic, and we do have hope that there may be some relief on the way. Yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose almost 1,000 points with the news that there could be a potential vaccine on the way, and that's a potential vaccine, one that has been effective on about 8 people. But let's see what happens, and right now we're ready for any good news we can find. We're in phase one of the reopening of the economy, which happened on the 15th as Governor Edwards lifted the stay-at-home order a bit. But we're far from getting to the finish line on this, and Louisiana's capacity for restaurants, 25%. If you go to many restaurants, as I do, you notice that there's substantial spacing between the tables, and people are doing their best to stay safe despite something that is really, when you get down to it, an intimate thing, eating. And of course, we commend the workers for exposing themselves to potential harm, handling people's plates and silverware and that sort of thing. But nonetheless, we are trying to get back on our feet. And what's your early read, Adam Knapp, on how things are going?
Well, it was good to see that there was a piece in the Advocate today about restaurants reopening and that it's going better than expected. You're seeing that business is recovering, even as it is at 25% capacity. And as I mentioned, I think we're in a pilot phase to learn from these experiences what works, what doesn't, so that we start to establish the new normal protocols for health and safety, as you pointed out, until there's a vaccine. And hopefully the news is promising that there will be one soon. But we expect this is still going to be quite a long time. We're going to be in this period of safety restrictions. And so the ability for us to learn in phase one how to do that is going to be something that makes it possible to try to reduce the spread, make it more likely that each parish in Louisiana can move to phase two and not have what happened in Texas, where some of the counties in Texas were held back from moving to phase two. So that's going to be all dependent on us as citizens, as consumers, and as businesses to make sure that we're doing those safety practices we can to keep our numbers down. That's going to be good for the economy in the long run.
Now, a listener, this is Tracy at the Capitol, mentioning one of the iconic Baton Rouge restaurants that has failed amid this pandemic. Rama on Perkins Road is no longer. In fact, I saw yesterday DiGiulio Brothers has purchased the building and the land, but yeah. Do you have fear that others will go by the wayside?
You know, it's been our fear all along, and the U.S. Chamber's philosophy, this is a separate national organization that we've been paying quite a lot of attention to, has said that, you know, no business should have to go out of business during this period, and of course many will. And so Rama, you mentioned, is a restaurant where my wife and I had our first date, a little Thai restaurant on Perkins Road. There are going to be many of those that just don't have the cash reserves, or it's just the right time for them as owners to stop doing what they've been doing as a business practice. Our concern is that at the back end of this, we need to see a vibrant economy, a lot of job opportunities, and so all that we've been doing through phase zero of this has been about trying to sustain as many businesses as possible, whether we're looking at the federal programs, whether we're looking at state actions. And, Jim, I think there's really three things that are still top of mind that employers remain concerned about that helps with the reopening. It's the access to safety equipment and safety guidance. And two has been access to child care so they can start to get their folks back. Those that are able and don't have high risk need to know that there's child care. And we're seeing today, I think BREC likely to be announcing soon that they're going to be offering summer camps, in-person summer camps. YMCA has announced that they're going to be having summer camps to start to address some of those summer child care needs. And so those, I think, are still high priority issues. And then the third area has been legal liability for employers that, as they reopen, that they aren't at risk of lawsuits for workers who might claim that they got sick at work. And employers at the same time need to have workers coming back. And so a bill by Representative Presley is moving through the process that would provide for legal liability across Louisiana for employers, other bills that deal with nonprofits and governmental agencies like schools to make sure that they have protections from liability as well. So we're starting to see all of these pieces fall into place about what's necessary for the reopening.
A listener also asks, and we'll close with this as a final question for Adam and go to Mike Berto of Blue Cross Blue Shield, who's on deck. But the headline in today's Advocate, casinos reopen with sanitized conditions. The story by Brooks Cabino, who usually writes sports, and this guy is a talented writer. His story reads like this. The dealer sprays the dice with a bottle of disinfectant, and a masked gambler leans into the craps table, his cheekbones raised in a grin. Leave them wet, he tells the dealer. They won't roll as much. The dealer looks back sharply, her hands reaching for a nearby roll of paper towels. The glow of a Monday afternoon shines from the skylight of the Hollywood Casino in Baton Rouge, where this half-sized craps table is surrounded by the beeps and boops of twinkling slot machines. The dealer must wipe the dice. That's the only way that these men can alter the portions of chips that each rest in one of the table's six wooden placeholders, every other one sealed shut with black masking tape. It's a new day. But Governor Edwards did allow the casinos a bit of a break. He got some pressure to do so, and he agreed to allow them to operate at 50% of their gambling positions. Your early read on this?
Well, it's another signal of the new normal. I think that you're – that writing, by the way, is beautiful that Brooks sent to you, folks. You can read the whole article. The new normal is going to be like that. Those bizarre comments about the dice being wet as they're rolling and how the gambler feels about it. I think we're going to have experiences like that across the economy. And I want to come back to the fact that that is the thing that's going to make it possible for us to continue to see reopening, is that we are following those safety protocols as employers' offices, as businesses, and taking it very seriously, not being lax in our activity. Jim, we are screening folks at our front door. The building at BRAC, the Baton Rouge Area Chamber, our Center for Economic Development in downtown Baton Rouge, reopened on Monday with a voluntary reopening. We're going to screen folks with temperature screenings at the door, ask safety protocol questions. Whether you're a vendor or a visitor or an employee, you're going to be asked the same questions. And those are the kinds of things we're learning from, you know, your next guest, Blue Cross, has been giving us great advice about how to make sure we're all safe as employers as we reopen.
Well, thank you, Adam Knapp. It's always a pleasure, and I know we'll catch up soon. Appreciate what you do. Thank you, sir. Appreciate
thank you, Jim.
It. Take care. Adam Knapp of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. Now we're joined by Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. He's been on our show many times, and he's also a certified health consultant, professional of the Academy of Healthcare Management, and a quarter century of analytical experience in the healthcare, telecom, and retail industry sectors. And a year ago at this time, if we were talking Mike Berto, we wouldn't have thought about a pandemic. The president didn't even think about it February 4th when he was giving his State of the Union address. So we're in a new day. It's all we're talking about now, or so it seems. And, of course, it's changed the nature of health care and particularly insurance. How's it looking from your perspective?
Well, Jim, thanks for having me on today. And I want to tell all my friends and neighbors out there who are dealing with coronavirus that you're doing a good job and stay the course as best you can. What we're seeing is some very interesting trends in the healthcare marketplace that have been driven by COVID. In a lot of ways, the reaction to this pandemic has knocked down some barriers. For example, telemedicine. Prior to the pandemic, we would expect to process about 1,000 telemedicine claims in a given month. In the month of April alone, we processed 160,000 telemedicine claims. So clearly, you know, we were kind of waiting for the millennial marketplace to embrace the whole telemedicine concept. COVID pushed it right over the top, and now everybody is using telemedicine. And I want to encourage people to continue to monitor your other health conditions. We're putting so much focus on COVID right now, but 97% of the claims we're paying today are not COVID-related. So whatever health conditions we walked into this pandemic with as a state are still there, are still active, and we really need people to keep taking your meds, keep talking to your physicians, and keep managing your chronic conditions.
877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield, is with us. And, of course, we have reports that many people are refraining from going to their doctor because they don't want to sit in a waiting room. And telemedicine, of course, is a way to perhaps get around that. But it's a new day. It's affected everything, including healthcare, in a huge way. And we'll return with Mike Berto after this pause for the news on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Engster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support coming from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana, is with us. Your number is 877-217-5757. We've received already more than a few emails at talk@talklouisiana.org for Mike Berto. And one of those is about the news yesterday that a trial appears safe, but eight people have responded well to a potential vaccine, and that stimulated the markets yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average having its best day in several months. And stock benchmarks in Europe went up 6%, too. Oil prices jumped. All this on the hope that a vaccine is promising. And this is from a company called Moderna, which is based in the United States on the East Coast. And Mike Berto, if we were to get a vaccine, how would that work as far as getting it to the people and making it readily available as quickly as possible?
Well, I think it's safe to assume that any vaccine that's proven its worth and is FDA approved and has the requisite effectiveness and safety statistics behind it would be very rapidly deployed within the United States. Sort of like we do the annual flu shots, you know, where they're everywhere. I think the demand for a coronavirus vaccine would be huge. It probably would make sense to prioritize the vaccines so that the people most at risk get the earliest shots. But those, of course, are decisions that will be made probably by the FDA or the CDC and not made specifically by health insurance companies or even probably docs. But it is encouraging to see. I can't remember a time in my experience in the healthcare sector where every drug company, it seems like, you know, and we don't talk about this very often, but there are 2,000 drug companies operating in the United States and in Europe alone. So when a handful, even 20 or 30 of them decide we're all going to work on the exact same project or try to achieve the same outcome, that is a gigantic investment in terms of what we would normally see. So it's very encouraging, and I do think they'll be successful. I think we need a little time to make sure that it's effective and safe, you know, so that we can get this thing into the market and sort of blunt the effect that COVID's having on everybody and everything right now.
877-217-5757 is your number for Mike Berto. David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on with Mike Berto.
Good morning, gentlemen. The President of the United States, Donald John Trump, has promised to always allow people with pre-existing illness to have access to health care. At the same time, there's an active lawsuit that will be heard by the Supreme Court conveniently after the election, supported by Attorney General Jeff Landry of Louisiana. If that suit is successful, millions and millions of people will lose health care at the worst time you can imagine. How could the President of the United States be such a liar? Now that he's taken the hydroxychloroquine, maybe he might want to rinse his brains in Lysol. Maybe.
All right. Okay. David in Atlanta's on a roll. But Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is still under siege, and 14 Republican governors in the United States have still not taken the Medicaid benefit that is available for their states. Mike Berto, your thoughts about whether Obamacare will survive once again, or is it on life support?
Well, I think that if you ever needed a stronger demonstration of the value of a third-party payer safety net for the average Joe out there who's just trying to work and make a living. I don't think you could ask for a bigger demonstration than what we're going through right now. I do believe that the guys supporting the lawsuit still believe that the Supreme Court will carve out the pieces that they don't like but keep the pieces they do like. That feels like a rather large gamble to me overall. David brought it up, and, you know, I'm impressed he doesn't have his own show yet. Somewhere, somebody's going to give that guy a show. We really need to focus on the fact that if you're employed, we're not seeing a lot of employers shutting off their health benefits to their employees, but we are seeing employees getting furloughed and laid off because oil has been so depressed and because of the economic impact of COVID. If this happens to you and you lose your health insurance benefits from work, don't panic. You live in Louisiana. You've got a gigantic, wonderful safety net between the Medicaid expansion and the huge amounts of money the feds are pouring into the individual coverage on healthcare.gov and the availability of short-term health insurance. There's really no reason right now where anybody should be uninsured or at risk financially for their health care. We just have so many alternatives. Mm-hmm. I would encourage people, seek them out, especially if your benefits at work go away.
All right. Tam on Corsi says David would have done very well if Air America hadn't bombed out 10 years ago. And I think he's right. He would have been beautiful on that network. Yeah. But the pharmaceutical industry in our country often gets some criticism, and maybe justifiably so, but this search for a vaccine is starting right here in America, and probably if there is one found, it will be from an American company, and that's a big if, and this company we're talking about is a U.S. company, Moderna. But we're a long way from the finish line on this, and some of us who believe in drugs being effective and know firsthand how effective they can be, would probably like to do what the president's doing. We'd like to go out and get a little hydroxychloroquine. If I want to do that and I go to my family physician, Mike Berto, is it a good chance I'm going to be able to get a prescription for hydroxychloroquine?
Well, I don't know how available it is. I haven't been tracking it through the drugstore inventories or anything like that. So I'm afraid that's a little outside of my wheelhouse. But I do know that, you know, when patients are in the hospital and they have COVID-19 and they become very ill and, it gets scary as they kind of deteriorate, some patients are being treated with drug cocktails, two or three different types of drugs. One of those was hydroxychloroquine and zithromycin, I believe it was, one of the antibiotics. We've seen people treated with remdesivir and a few other drugs. Anything to shorten those hospital stays, to avoid having to be put on a ventilator right now. We don't have great options, but those are the options we have. Which ones are the most effective? I don't think that testing's done yet. I think we've got a ways to go on the science to really understand which one is the safest and which one is the most effective. Too early in the game, in my opinion.
Karen Merrifield writes, would love for David in Atlanta to have his own show, and the gentleman at the country club, Henry, who also calls you Mr. Jim. So maybe we can have like an array of talk hosts after this program. I'm all for that. But another listener, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you. You're the one who brought it up about David getting his own program.
Yeah, it's my fault. I know. I was thinking that your next career might be talent scout or agent.
Well, a listener, this was a question actually for Adam Knapp, but Tom on Blue Bonnet wanted to know about gyms and whether they're safe, and he pointed me to a story in the New York Times science section today from Gretchen Reynolds, and I'm just reading this on the fly, but it does say that 25% of the surfaces tested in four different athletic training facilities found bacteria, flu virus, and other pathogens. Now, that might be true also if you tested any place of business. Germs are present, believe it or not, everywhere you go, and most of them are not COVID-19. But is there a risk in being in a gym?
Well, you know, I think it all depends on who the people are that are in your life. You know, if you live with people who are high on the risk factor list, people who are over 60, people who have hypertension, people who are overweight, people who have diabetic, people who have any kind of respiratory issues or cardiac issues, if I lived with, I do live with people with those risk factors, I am extremely careful when I go out into public. When I try to grocery shop only once a week, I wear a mask, I wear long sleeves, I leave all the clothes in the garage, and I even have outside shoes and inside shoes. But that's because I live with people who are at risk, and COVID-19 could be very bad for them. I think that's the question you've got to ask yourself. You may be healthy and not really susceptible to the disease yourself. You've got to ask that question, who do I come in contact with on a regular basis that I might infect, that might do very poorly if they contracted COVID? And if that means going to the gym or not going to the gym, I think that's a personal decision. People need to take a look around them and see who else they might put at risk. It's not just about us, right? It's about the community, the people.
All right. I think probably going to a gym has more benefits than detriments. And I've been three times since my gym reopened on Friday. 877-217-5757. We open Pandora's box. Mike Berto is at your service. Henry at the Country Club. Hi, Henry.
Hello, Mr. Jim. Hello, Mr. Mike. I'm glad to see y'all both still alive and well. I was very concerned. I see Trump taking that high hydroxychloroquine, I can't say it right now, and that would be the dream of the insurance companies because it's been around so long, it's less than pennies a pill. I was wondering, what y'all are doing to get Trump to egg that on?
Well, the president has, as we know, has his followers, and I would suspect, you know, he's a popular guy, and he doesn't appear to be at death's door, but he's obviously got some health issues. But the fact that he is endorsing this, think of what it would cost if he were to have been on a commercial endorsing it. A lot of people probably want to try it, Mike Berto.
Well, we 100% encourage people to consult with their primary care physicians and follow their guidance. Those are going to be your personal experts. There's nobody out there who's going to have more information about your particular health conditions than that primary care doctor that you've been partnered with all these years. So I always point people back to their PCPs. If you don't have a regular primary care doc, this is a great time to get one. They may not be as busy as they are normally. So I would encourage everybody, when we talk about questions about your personal health, what drugs to take, what might work or not work, follow your PCP's advice, and we'll support you in that. You know.
All right, we do have to take a break, but we will return with Mike Berto. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Mike Berto, Blue Cross Blue Shield Chief Healthcare Economist, is with us. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. President Trump said yesterday he's been taking hydroxychloroquine, an anti-malaria drug that the Food and Drug Administration has warned can cause serious heart problems for coronavirus patients. He said he's taking the drug as a preventive measure and continues to test negative for COVID-19. A listener, Walker, on Corsi, just sent a note. Let me pull it up here, saying, Nancy Pelosi just called the president morbidly obese in a CNN interview and saying, Mort Walker on Corsi saying, I thought of Talk Louisiana, where he says that term was first used. So it's nice to be on the cutting edge of societal evolution. And Matt Doyle, our crack producer, has found Nancy Pelosi. Here she is, the speaker.
He's our president, and I would rather he not be taking something that has not been approved by the scientist, especially in his age group and in his, shall we say, weight group, what is morbidly obese, they say.
Okay, that's Nancy Pelosi commenting about the president of the United States, and that gets back to going to gyms. People who are generally in shape are not dying from this for the most part. It's people who have underlying health conditions, and if you've got diabetes or extremely high blood pressure, then maybe the gym's not for you. But common sense comes into play here, Mike Berto, and at some point people have to use their common sense to determine whether or not it's worth the risk. But I would say being in shape is probably the biggest panacea next to a vaccine. And if you're not exercising, shame on you during this time. What do you think?
Well, I think exercise as directed by your physician in a moderate sense is always a good idea. You know, if you can do it by just taking a walk in your neighborhood, or like I have a treadmill inside my house that I walk on whenever I need to think. It's kind of my version of pacing, if you know what I mean. Always a good idea. It can't hurt to be in good shape. I can tell you that I have read some stories about folks who went through COVID and talked to a few people who've been through it, who were relatively young and healthy, and it was no picnic for them. So in any event, you know, it's always a good idea to take care of yourself, always.
S.J. Muller writes, went to dental appointment at 9 o'clock, no staff wearing masks, so I left while getting my blood pressure checked by attendant with no mask or gloves. Okay. Here's one from Sadie saying, I'm concerned that office workers who return to work don't all comply with 6 feet social distancing and wearing masks. These places of work are often small businesses that don't have a lot of general public contact, but do have clients coming into the office occasionally. Is there any way to protect, in this case, for example, we've got a full staff here, and we have for 2 months right here where I am broadcasting this program from, and occasionally we get closer than 6 feet. But is there any way to do that in these times? We try, but as people are people, and they make mistakes.
Yeah.
Sometimes we fail.
I thought I had an eye doctor appointment 3 weeks ago, and again last week, and I thought those facilities, I had to go to two different locations, and they were extremely creative in protecting their patients. So one of them had an awning outside. I drove up. They took my temperature with one of those thermal scanners. Everybody was wearing masks. They took my information, and they said, just sit out here in your car, and we'll call you or text you when your appointment time comes. So there was no clustering in a waiting room. I went in the parking lot. They called me maybe 5 minutes later. A nurse met me at the door. Everybody masked. They took me into a room. They wiped the chair down. The doctor came in. He was wearing a mask. I was wearing a mask. I felt very safe, but it was a lot of work for them.
Debbie in Prairieville, you're on with Mike Berto. Hi, Debbie.
Hi. I'm calling about the medications that President Trump is on. I have a sister that has Sjogren's disease, and she is on that same medication for her Sjogren's disease. She's monitored every 3 months to check for heart condition or liver problems. And just wanted to let people know, it is a good drug for certain things, but it is very well monitored by the doctors. Thank you.
All right. And I'm sure the president has the very best doctors at his service, as he should. He is the leader of the free world. A guy who isn't the leader of the free world has gotten almost as much attention at times right here in our midst, a fellow named Tony Spell, who was anonymous just a few months ago but has become a national, if not global, figure. And he continues to be defiant. And Michael Bailey, a loyal listener, actually found this video of him a few days ago. Here's the latest from Tony Spell on what he's going to do in phase one.
I assure the news media today that we will comply with the governor's orders whenever they sell popsicles in hell and set up an ice skating rink in the Lake of Fire and sell tickets for admission. We will never comply with any anti-God, anti-church, anti-free American Christian order that says do not have church. Today, I still have this ankle bracelet on. I am arrested in my home. What has changed? What's changed is, starting this Sunday, we will operate at 125% capacity. Starting this Sunday, we will become more vile yet than thus. Starting this Sunday, people from Illinois, Indiana, California, Georgia, and New York, new state, will be in our services in person, where we will preach the unadulterated Word of God from an unfettered pulpit with boldness that will cause Satan and his imps to cower back into the lake of fire where they belong. So God bless us all. God bless America.
we continue to do what we do with a change of heart that says, let's do more of it in Jesus' name.
All right, that's Tony Spell in a rainstorm telling people that he's going to be defiant right to the end as he sits there with an ankle bracelet on and a chair outside his church. And Mike Berto, most of us, I think, in this country and in this community are people who believe in some higher power. But in this case, should we leave it all to the higher power to protect us?
Well, that's an excellent question. I'll just answer it this way. This Sunday, for the first time since COVID really hit, our church, Cross of Glory Lutheran, they'll be so glad I told you that, reopened in a very structured way. Most of the people were wearing masks. There was spacing. We were careful. We were so happy to be back together. And it was a little bit smaller crowd than you would expect. They kept their online service going, so you had the choice, watch from home, watch in the service, and we were joyful and pleased to be back together, but we were careful, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, you're on the air with Mike Berto.
Yes, I've seen that Tony Spell thing, and I've got a friend that's doing a one-man protest on that church about every day of the week. But my question is to the gentleman that represents the insurance companies is, someone's got to carry Pastor Spell's insurance on his church, and that would just seem like, you know, just a catastrophe waiting to happen. That's all I got.
All right. I don't know if that's Blue Cross's responsibility, but anyway, Mike has a point.
Yeah, he raises a good point because, you know, normal risk models have to be dramatically adjusted for a pandemic because it changes the flows of everything. It changes risk factors. It changes where people go and what people do. In fact, I know there's going to be a push here very shortly to grant some kind of immunity to companies who, before we figured out what to do, had employees who got infected and perhaps died because they got infected at their workplace. So I think you're going to see a lot of attention paid coming forward to liability lawsuits that are designed specifically to try to attract government intervention. Can we get some immunity? Can we get some protection? Mm-hmm. Because we really didn't understand COVID and we didn't know what it was going to do. More to come on that for sure.
And how are things at the big Blue Cross headquarters on Blue Bonnet? Is it business as usual?
Yeah, I couldn't be more proud of our operation. I mean, we transitioned from a 2,500-person headquarters to 90% plus work at home just about as seamlessly as you could imagine. Fully functional, doing everything we were doing before, still adding companies, still adding and deleting people who come and go, paying claims, making sure providers had the cash flow they needed to keep doing what they're doing, keeping in touch with the patients that we monitor every day who are at risk. It really was impressive to me the way this organization reacted to an unprecedented situation. It reminded me a lot of the creativity I saw when Katrina hit, only this time we didn't really have a safe space to retreat to, right, because it's everywhere. So Blue Cross is financially strong, doing very well, and taking good care of our customers everywhere I look.
All right. Well, thank you, Mike Berto. Always a pleasure, and let's catch up soon. And Mike began our discussion by saying 97% of the claims at this point are not COVID-related. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services, and we'll talk about this crazy pandemic and how it's affecting our world and our politics when we return tomorrow. Until then, thanks for listening and stay tuned.